From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. If you spend much time on YouTube or Instagram, chances are you're pretty familiar with people who are social media influencers. These, of course, are popular online personalities who are paid to promote products in their social feeds, often mixing posts about their personal lives with promotions of things like shoes, makeup, or diet supplements. This form of marketing has exploded. From virtually nothing a decade ago, companies are projected to spend about $10 billion on social media influencers in 2020. Today, a single Instagram endorsement by celebrities like Kylie Jenner or LeBron James can be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars for brands like Adidas or Apple. But even people with as few as 5,000 followers can sometimes get free products or cash for product recommendations. So this booming industry has led to a number of different concerns for regulators and for the companies that are paying for all these social media posts. Just last month, the Federal Trade Commission laid out new guidelines for influencers. So on this edition of Global Journalist, we'll look at the rise of social media influencers and how they're changing the world of advertising. First, we're going to bring in an up-and-coming micro-influencer to get a view of how all this works. Yara Mobote models clothes and offers beauty and fashion advice on Instagram and YouTube under the name Yara Mel. She lives in Mozambique, but she joins us now from London. Yara, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I mean, first of all, just start out, tell us how you got into becoming a social media influencer.
Well, I got to it by accident. It all started with a passion for style. So I started blogging back in 2011, very naive, thinking nothing of it, just like most people, actually. But then it started booming a few years from then. And that's when I realized that it could be something that I could make a living out of.
And so now you have this this YouTube channel, you have an Instagram feed. Like, what are some of the videos or photos you've posted that have been really successful?
Just photos of my style. Those are usually more successful. For some reason, people love to see what you're wearing. And I feel like that's when brands can capitalize a lot. Apparel brands can capitalize on that, because we love seeing other people express their style. And same with the videos. I think videos on my personal life and videos on my style are usually the ones that do best.
And right. And so, like, on your video feed, you do a number of, like, you offer advice and beauty tips as well, it sounds like. And you have something like 14,000 followers now across both YouTube and Instagram. And it sounds like over the past year, you've just begun to be able to start sort of monetizing this.
Yes, I started monetizing effectively in 2017. Brands started noticing me because I also have a blog, which is another good source of income for me. And companies usually pay me just to put a link to their website. So that's really interesting. And that's something that I was really happy to find out.
Okay.
I could monetize on.
So there's been, I understand, a perfume company, online shopping sites, companies like this are approaching you. And like, how much money can you make for doing this?
One of them paid me $70 just for a hyperlink. The other one paid me $50 for a hyperlink.
Okay. And our companies, do they also reach out to you offering you products saying like, will you model our shoes in your video and you can keep the pair of shoes, something like this?
Yes, there's usually companies offering me products to send me products. I used to get products when I was living in the UK. Now that I'm in Mozambique, it's a bit more hard, but yeah, that's usually how they go about it.
Okay. Well, there was a poll by the toy company Lego earlier this year of 3,000 children in the U.S. and a couple of other countries, and it found that actually becoming a YouTuber was the top career aspiration for 8 to 12-year-olds here. What do you think young people find so appealing about doing this?
I think it's mostly about being able to do something that you're passionate about every day instead of going to a job that you are miserable in. To be honest, at this point, being a YouTuber is also my goal. I can't wait to be able to make a consistent living out of it. And I still don't know how I'm going to tell that to my parents, but I am a part of that group. And I think creatively, it's very exciting to be able to make a living out of your creativity. I think it all stems from that. And also, it's an opportunity that we have as a generation. I mean, our parents, our grandparents could have never had this, even think about this. So I think we all should make the most out of this era that we're living in, because it's beautiful.
Well, I think part of what's interesting about this whole phenomenon is that, you know, you mentioned that sometimes you're getting paid to post links, to sometimes you're being given free apparel or free accessories, things like this that you model on your site. But people looking at your site, are they always aware that you're being paid to display these products or to promote them?
Yes. During the recent years, it's become very important that bloggers disclose when they're getting paid to promote something, just so that the audience can judge between, you know, knowing what it is their personal opinion and a personal recommendation and what it is something that they're being paid to do, so that you can have that discretion and not just buy something because you assume the blogger recommended, but the blogger is actually being paid. So it's important to be very transparent about it now. And I think that's really good because it makes the industry a bit more serious.
Well, one of the things that has come under scrutiny also in this industry over the past few years is that there's been reporting that a lot of people don't actually have many real followers, that people are buying followers, that there are actually bot accounts that are being used to sort of hype someone's popularity on Instagram. What do you make of all that?
I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean, everyone wants to get there fast because becoming an influencer and gaining a follower is not an easy job. It takes a lot of persistence, good content, quality content, patience. The best bloggers I know have been trying to make a living out of this for 5, 6, 7 years. And not everyone is willing to wait that time. So they obviously are going to take the easier route, which gladly has been exposed now through bots and, you know, fake followers and all of that. Unfortunately, many of people have been able to make money over fake followers and fake likes. But I think for the years to come, it's not going to be that easy because Instagram is taking a closer look on those accounts. The marketing companies are also making a closer study on the profile of the person before they make an offer. So I think it's going to become better. But yeah, some people just can't, they just don't want to put in the work. They would rather take the easy way out.
And I should say, like, I spent some time looking at your Instagram account, at your YouTube. The photos on your Instagram account are excellent, I should say. Like, they look like photos from a women's magazine. but I wanted to ask you, like, what do you think the companies that are reaching out to you, what do you think they find appealing in paying you to promote their products?
Thank you. I put a lot of effort on my images. I think I would rather post quality images, few quality images, than many images with no quality. And I think companies find that important because if I'm going to promote their product, I should have a good image on their product, you know? So they want to associate their product to a good quality image, a good quality feed. And I think that's why they approach me, because I don't just take pictures with my phone. I try to put in some camera quality as well. So I think that takes the content to the next level. It gives a more high-end finish to the photos.
Well, Yara Mobote, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
This is Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the rise of social media influencers. Up next, we're going to take a look at how companies that are paying people like Yara to endorse their products think about this industry. For that, we're joined by Julie Ann Maddock of the public relations and marketing firm We Are The Lead. She joins us now from New York City. Julie, welcome.
Good morning, Jason.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. You've done PR and marketing campaigns for many, many big brands. Give us just a little bit of the history about how companies started getting interested in influencers.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because if you think about when citizen journalists started to rise up in the ranks in terms of influence, there were bloggers about a decade and plus years ago. And it was really when influencers started, in the form of bloggers, started to monetize their media properties. And they themselves became media publishers. And as the rise of social media platforms started to increase, so too were those channels being monetized by influencers because, one, they, as you mentioned, Yara's content is beautiful, almost media quality. And there was a level of real-time engagement that marketers such as myself were able to, in a sense, intercept, the target audiences that follow a particular influencer. And so what we're seeing now is proliferation of amazing influencers who not only have the social media communities, but they also have, you know, their value is about creating content. Their value is about influencing also offline and utilizing them for, you know, PR purposes and having them serve as a spokesperson versus going to celebrities and, you know.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you, Julian. I mean, like, if you're a company, why would you want to hire someone? I mean, Yara is still, I think she's made maybe what you'd call a nano influencer. Mm-hmm. Why would you want to spend money on having her advertise your product as opposed to hiring like a supermodel or somebody who's already extremely famous?
You know, that's a really great question, because if you think about Yara's community, while it may be small, you can almost bet that there's a large majority of somebody who may, you know, reach out to a particular audience in London who, you know, her followers may be based, maybe beauty enthusiasts. And so you're kind of looking at influencers who have a very specific segment. And so you want to utilize influencers who that may not have a million and plus followers, because I think we've been kind of conditioned in a way to look at somebody like a Kim Kardashian who has a gazillion followers. And that's wonderful. You're driving scale and you're driving that awareness. But that brand may not necessarily match up with the very people that you're trying to reach out to, whereas nano influencers and micro influencers have that community that you're trying to reach out to.
Okay, so like if you're selling like yoga shirts or something like this, you can find influencers who are yoga enthusiasts and have a specific yoga enthusiast audience then.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's, you know, a strategic way to do it.
But to me, it also seems like part of what's appealing about these smaller influencers is that I think you get the sense that they're more authentic. And when I see like Tom Brady wearing Uggs boots, I think like, sure, like Tom Brady's wearing Uggs boots, but does he like them or is he just paid to wear them? And maybe you think that a bit less about micro influencers?
The way that I think marketers nowadays are looking at it is that, you know, making sure that the brand aligns with the actual person, right? However, influencers, I think people and consumers in general, the way that we should be thinking about influencers is their value. So some influencers serve a specific role, and that is, let's say, Tom Brady. We want to utilize Tom Brady for Uggs boots because he has such a massive amount of followers across social media as well as, traditional media channels. However, micro influencers, again, they have, again, a targeted set of audiences. But when you look at influencers, we have to go beyond their follower base and their community size, because they serve so much more than just being a distribution channel for brands. It's really about whether or not Tom Brady is going to engage, whether or not he's going to wear them on the red carpet, for example, where, you know, your photographer can capture that for advertising purposes. So the value of influencers should be looked upon as just being beyond social media channels and engagements.
Well, talk to us just a bit about these new guidelines from the Federal Trade Commission that were released last month. What do they say? I mean, is this going to be a big deal for a lot of companies, for social media influencers?
I think that the FTC has, in a sense, conditioned, you know, agencies to really consider the way that they operate across social and digital at large. I think, nowadays, big companies, as well as startup companies, they're starting to develop their own social media policies.
Oh, and so sorry, Julian, we should just point out that these are all about disclosure. Like when you post something that you're paid, and you're paid to wear something or to advertise something, you're supposed to use, what is it, hashtag ad? You're supposed to make it clear to the viewer that, like, this is a paid post. This isn't just me saying that I like this hat or I like this shirt.
Right. Just to determine that, you know, XYZ influencer has been paid to essentially sponsor XYZ brand. And so the FTC guidelines and the ways that, you know, agencies nowadays and even companies are working to ensure that they're compliant is to, one, make sure that you understand the guidelines. And oftentimes the bigger companies, the big CPG companies, they've hired, you know, lawyers to really decipher, if you will, the FTC guidelines. They just issued the latest Social Media Guidelines 101 last month. And I have to tell you, you know, within the last decade, those set of guidelines have been much more clearer. They're easier to understand. And, you know, being able to operate and navigate what the FTC considers as being compliant is a lot easier than it was a decade ago. And so the ways that, agencies and companies at large can work with the FTC is to ensure that, number one, yes, you're following the guidelines because they are more direct, but also teams now are building their own set of guidelines and making sure that, especially CPG companies, if you're working with, a big brand, they'll go to, you know, the council to just ensure that from their interpretation of the FTC guidelines that they are following and being compliant.
Okay. And so when you say CPG companies, these are consumer products companies then?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, great. Well, Julianne Medic, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're talking about the rise of social media influencers. So if you're interested in more global journalists, check us out online at globaljournalist.org. You can like us on Facebook, where we live stream, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on NPR Podcasts, or see our videocast on YouTube. For some more perspective on some of the issues around social media influencers, we're going to bring in two other people who have been following this. With us from Auckland, New Zealand, is Summer Capitan. She's a senior lecturer at the Auckland University of Technology who researches this. And with us from Washington is Simon Owens. He's a technology journalist and marketing consultant who wrote about this issue recently for New York Magazine. It's a pleasure to have both of you. Summer Capitan, let me start with you. Talk to us just a little bit about how influencers are regulated in New Zealand and other parts of the world. We heard a little bit about the regulations here in the U.S.
So there's a slight difference. I think the U.S. is a bit ahead. And this is in part because social influencers and the penetration of digital advertising and media definitely peaked a bit earlier in the U.S. and in the U.K. So there's a lot more around disclosure. And right now in New Zealand, in Australia, and in the U.K., the Advertising Standards Authority says if you are given a product as an influencer, if you are being paid for a post, you do not have to disclose it with that hashtag ad. You don't have to disclose it unless the brand has oversight. So if the agency that's creating the content, if the company itself has oversight of what becomes the content itself that, for instance, Yara would be producing, then you have to disclose it. Otherwise,
okay, wait a minute. This is really confusing.
It comes across as an opinion.
Let me just stop you. So, like, say a company sends me a really nice leather jacket, and I put the pictures of myself wearing that leather jacket on my Instagram account. Like, I don't have to say that that's an ad, even though I get to keep the jacket, or maybe I made some money, unless the company that gave me the jacket says, like, we okay these photos, or we okay this text that you're putting with it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting. I mean, Simon Owens, let me turn this to you then. Like, so you wrote a lengthy article about regulating influencers for New York. I mentioned. Why do you think these FTC, like, why did the FTC decide to issue these new guidelines now? Like, why are they stepping into this more?
I think that you're seeing a lot of consumer confusion about what is an ad and what isn't. There's a regular BuzzFeed column, for instance, where they actually kind of poke fun at this, where they try to guess whether a celebrity has posted a photo as an ad or not, because it's almost kind of like a running joke about how everything is an ad on Instagram, and you really have no idea what was actually paid for or not. So they're seeing this definitely as a very pervasive problem, especially for kind of more shady industries like health supplements or cryptocurrency and things like this. So they see this as a real problem.
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting too, because I think probably the number one social media influencer in the world right now is Kylie Jenner. And I spent some time studying her Instagram account before we did this show. And it wasn't that clear to me which of her posts were ads and which weren't. Like, if you read the text carefully, for some of them, she would include like hashtag ad. But for others, she was wearing like a sweatshirt with Chanel branded across the front. And she was just posting that, I guess, as like a personal post, like, here I am enjoying my life, and I'm wearing a Chanel sweatshirt.
Yeah, and it's actually getting even more confusing in the other direction, because you see a lot of wannabe influencers who want to attract advertisers and brands actually pretending that their posts are ads, even though they were never actually paid for the brand. It's kind of like a fake it till you make it type of approach, where if they see you wearing Chanel or you know, Ray-Ban sunglasses or something like that, then other brands will be attracted to you because they think you're a big deal.
Okay, that's really interesting. I mean, Summer Capitan, I mean, how can individual governments, how can they even begin to regulate this on their own? I mean, you talk about how New Zealand has certain regulations, the UK has certain regulations, and the US has these new regulations by the Federal Trade Commission. I mean, is it realistic for them to be doing enforcement on this when even people are confused about what is an ad and what isn't an ad for, like, celebrities, much less smaller people, like, you know, much smaller influencers?
Yeah, well, if you consider that what we've considered advertising is almost like content poured into different formats. It used to be television commercials, still is, right? Newspaper advertisements, magazine advertisements. And now we begin to add this fact that we can post things online and we can post our content online. That means that it's a moving target. And the moment we begin to regulate it, we will find a new way to tell this story. And that's because social influencers are part of our daily lives, they're part of our lived experiences, especially if we're younger and we've grown up in this era. My students tell me about, you know, brushing their teeth and putting on their YouTube vlogs as they go so that they're not alone as they get ready for the day. And that means that that is just a part of their lives. That means that it's hard for governments to be able to follow regulations. Regulations lag practice, right? That's just a fundamental truth about how this industry is changing.
But traditional media, like as you mentioned newspapers, you mentioned television, like it's clear, I feel like it's clear, like what a newspaper ad is and what a news story is, or what's television entertainment content and what is an advertisement. But on Instagram, that's not clear.
Well, of course, it wasn't clear at first when the first radio drama started. We didn't know. We just knew it was brought to us by a soap company, which is where the word soaps came from, for that kind of content. So we're just getting used to, and we're coming of age. The moment we get to used to what is an ad, it will change. And it will change because we don't trust, as humans, as consumers, we don't trust brands as much as we trust humans. There's a fundamental change in the way for advertisers to get their message across, to capture our hearts and minds, is to find a new way to reach us, because we tend to put up literal ad blockers. We tend to think when it's an ad, it is not as meaningful. And the role of a good marketer, a good ad agency, is to find a way to get those messages to consumers without them necessarily having the wall up against an ad. So that's an interesting divide that regulation will lag behind.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways it's almost analogous to product placement in movies, where you see James Bond driving a Lexus, but you don't know, they probably did pay to have James Bond driving a Lexus in that movie. And then when you see the Lexus on the street, you think, oh, that's James Bond's car. But Simon Owens, let me turn this to you. I mean, so governments, I think, obviously, like, they seem limited in terms of what they can do about this, given the nature of the internet. Who should be doing something about this? Should it be tech companies? Should it be governments, or are things more or less fine as they are?
Yeah, so you see the governments, because there's just so many millions of influencers, they're doing one of two things. One of three things. They're targeting the brands themselves, because those are much larger and they're the ones that are employing like hundreds of influencers at a time. So you see a lot of the FTC fines that are going out, they're actually targeted towards the brands for not properly communicating to the influencers how they're supposed to disclose, versus going after the influencers themselves. When they have gone after influencers, they've gone after celebrities, because obviously that will generate a lot of news, which will send signals to lower level influencers. And then in some cases, they've gone after the tech companies themselves, especially when they're not complying with things like COPPA, which, you know, it has to do with kind of data collection and whether you can advertise to minors. So that's their strategy now. You're seeing the tech companies, especially since they're under so much scrutiny, regulatory scrutiny now, they're taking this situation seriously. So they've been rolling out a number of technical updates that have been aimed at curbing abuse and fraud.
But let me ask you, I mean, are these actually effective? I mean, it's striking that the big social media platforms have let so much falsehood and propaganda circulate for so long. Like, is it reasonable to expect that they'll be able to stop these sort of small scale influencers from being deceptive about when they're advertising or not?
Sure. I mean, they're not going to catch everybody, but we've seen when they take these situations seriously, we see improvements. For instance, Instagram has cut down on bot fraud by rolling out a number of features where your Instagram account will actually be punished and be seen by fewer of your followers if you're engaged in kind of automated bot activity. So there are kind of large scale systems that they've put in place that we've seen have an effect over time.
Okay. Well, Summer Capital, I'll let you weigh in, because it does seem like this is a little bit of a cat and mouse game.
We're talking about a fast evolving strategy. And that means that because so many people have those ad blockers up, there has to be a moment in which regulators are watching what's happening and trying to get ahead of the game. And I think I like what Julie said best about the idea that that disclosure and that industry becoming more serious, that the disclosure itself is rules that ad agencies themselves and brands are embracing. And I think that's a truism, that as an industry, we have to regulate ourselves. Consumers are becoming more aware of what an ad is, but the truth is that we trust social influencers. Recent studies have shown, and studies that we've run in our own lab, that influencers are perceived as more authentic, more expert, and more trustworthy. And that's because they're becoming the content creators. Ad agencies are spending less time, energy, and budget creating television commercials, hiring directors, and editors and actors, and instead are spending budget on a lot of these different micro-influencers who can target different audiences. So that means that there is an evolving strategy. But as that becomes more fine-tuned, I believe the next strategy will open up. We don't know what's going to happen on TikTok. How can we regulate what's happening on TikTok for our Generation Z, right? What is that process going to be like? We will only kind of be slightly behind the game. As I said, the Advertising Standards Authority is a little bit different than the FTC in Australia and New Zealand, and that means that only content that is approved by a brand right now has to be labeled an ad. Most tend to disclose if they've been sponsored by, but they don't have to. And right now we're in a wild west. That means that those rules are evolving. And that we will begin adopting more and more rules, but we need to keep up. It is a cat and mouse game. I think you say it correctly.
Well, Simon, we heard Summer talking about this as sort of the Wild West, and in your article, you actually highlighted a number of instances of just like bad behavior, sort of fraudulent activity, even blackmail by influencers. Talk to us just about a couple of those examples.
Yeah, so it happens a lot within kind of the beauty influencers, especially with beauty YouTube, where there's a lot of rival brands where they're being paid by one brand to promote their particular product. And there's been questions as to whether when they go and then review another product that they weren't paid for, has the payment from the other product somehow influenced their review of the competitor of that product. So I haven't seen any kind of hard and fast evidence of extortion, but there has been influencers who have or basically brands that have claimed that they've been threatened by influencers if they don't pay up.
Well, Summer Capitan, our time grows short. I'll give you the last word here. I mean, there have been a number of articles sort of predicting the death of this phenomenon. It seems like it's still growing. Where do you see things moving over the next few years?
Well, to respond kind of to what was just raised, we almost, if we follow and trust these social influencers, it doesn't matter to us if they were paid. We love their opinions. They're part of our daily lives. There's a sense of social intimacy and friendship. And that in particular is driving our response to how these influencers work. So I think we will only continue to find more ways as consumers to fall in love with new content and more ways as influencers, as advertising agencies, as companies and brands, to put content in front of consumers. So I think it almost matters less whether it's a true ad.
Well, we're out of time for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA, Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Yara Mabote, Julianne Maddock, Summer Capitan, and Simon Owens. Our assistant producers this week are Casey Bader, Benjamin Brink, and Grace Hugulet. Edom Kasaye and Trevor Hook are senior producers, and Kyle McCubbin is visual editor. Takiya Thomas is audio engineer. Kathy Kiley is executive editor. Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.